You might have been told that I am an absolutely appalling communist slut. My personal favourite is communist dyke Jew whore. I am only one of these things, but that's a pretty good Venn overlap of all of my friends. I am also apparently a neoliberal shill, and I'd just like to shout out if anybody here has anonymously abused me on the internet, get fucked, I have a microphone, you don't. Does anybody have a problem with swearing? Because if you do, it's going to be a long 10 minutes. As I said, I'm caring for my mother, and I'm pretty threadbare at this point. So it's going to get a bit raw,
because I can't swear at the 81-year-old woman with cancer.
That's not socially acceptable. This is driving me nuts.
Yeah,
anyway.
Careful. Just come through.
Okay.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. That's some drama school training that is going to break all of your ears. So anyway, I'm not supposed to be a journalist. I'm a journalist for The Guardian. As well as a Twitter personality, and it is wonderful to be with a real celebrity, Will from TikTok, today. And I'm not supposed to have that job because I never wanted to be a journalist, I never studied journalism, and really fundamentally did not interest me. I am lippy and political and had built a bit of a cult following on Twitter, mostly referring to people like Christopher Pyne as a human lizard. And I didn't realise, for I was young and naive, that the reason why I was agglomerating Twitter followers was in fact because I was political and entertaining and quite funny and had absolutely no sense of personal embarrassment, that I was divisive and that I attracted people who wanted to give me a hard time, and I was particularly good at emasculating men and making silly people look a bit silly. So that was my talent. I was asked to do a panel show in Sydney at a venue called The Vanguard, which when I went there used to be full of punks with heroin problems. Not so. So I spent an hour doing a feminist comedy night doing jokes about periods and cocks, and then the lights went on and I went, fuck me, that's the Premier of Queensland. Oh, okay. Also in the audience were the new editors of Guardian Australia, who obviously were from England and thought I was funny. And they came down to Melbourne, they interviewed me, and they said, would you like to be a columnist? And I thought, well, I'm in this for a good time, a long time, let's see as much trouble as I can cause. And apparently the question that got me the job was, what do Australians feel most uncomfortable talking about? And I went, this is a country that pretends it doesn't have a class system. And they went, would you like to be a columnist for The Guardian? And appropriately, somebody who I found out later had wanted the job tweeted, I mean, it's in public Twitter, people get that. Like, it's not just your mum, like, it's in public. Even people who don't follow you can see what you put there. And somebody wrote, but she didn't even go to private school. And I thought, well, how fucking stupid must your parents feel for all that money they spent? And I've got to say, like, I have thoroughly enjoyed generally being the only person from state school in most of the media rooms I'm in. Infamously, I was at a media party in Sydney, the first I was invited to, and let me tell you, the invitations have been declining in frequency ever since. And somebody said, oh, I heard you got a new boyfriend. I went, yeah, I do. And I mean, and he's a union guy? And I went, oh, my God, yes, he is. And they said, so I'm going to see Boy Castellanos, you know, he's at the ACTU. And one of them went, so is he like a mechanic? And I was like, aren't you an investigative journalist? Like, isn't that a thing you should know? Or the entire Australian working class just some kind of 1950s image of men in overalls? And I hate to break it to you, fam, but yes, and they still think that. My experience, like, everybody in the media is lovely, because obviously their parents paid a lot of money for them to learn those manners at the schools that they go to. And not at Port Hacking High School, Miranda, let me tell you. And it's always very interesting for me that sort of perpetuates. I have come to learn when I also trained union officials in how to make media and deal with the media, that they're not our friends, the mass media. They're beautifully well-mannered, lovely, charming parties, fantastic hors d'oeuvres, and drink in very amusing ways. But they are either liberals or their parents are. And that's it. Like, people like me, we don't exist. There's a handful of people who I would describe as having Labourist politics, like overtly trade union politics, even though obviously Mayo represents a lot of journalists. I wouldn't necessarily say that means they represent the organised working class, kind of a different vibe. But it's not a friendly atmosphere to us because it's culturally unfamiliar. It's unfamiliar with the language that we grew up in, and it's unfamiliar with the rituals and the behaviour that we participate in as unionists and as people from working class communities. And, you know, there might be a lot of organisers in the union movement who went to university, but generally you get motivated to come back and serve the community that you're from. And it's a fundamental... It distinguishes us, and it is an us-from-them scenario. So, like I said, I committed to having a good time, not a long time, and with the opportunity of having a column, I thought, you know, I never grew up seeing any positive media about unions. I never grew up seeing any positive media about organised working class people and what I consider to be the highest, most noble ideals of all humanity: solidarity, collectivism, struggle, self-sacrifice, unity, collectivism of action, what that means in the workplace and in the community and in the family. I never, ever saw those politics interpreted through the media. I found them through the Labor Party and through Labor communities around the Labor Party. I obviously found them in unions, I found them in community organisations, and I found them, quite honestly, in my neighbourhood, with the families who were like my family, who were Labor-voting trade union members and believed in those ideals of solidarity, family, collectivism, you know, one for all for one. You know, for any of the Star Trek nerds in the audience, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few and the one. Like, absolutely. And so having the opportunity of doing the column, I went for it. And what made it a little bit different for me was I had this rather extraordinary experience. Like I said, I never intended to be a journalist. What I did intend to be was an avant-garde feminist theatre maker, partially because I knew it would completely freak out my dad. And the satisfaction of going, I'm going to university to study contemporary theatre practice, was just one of those moments of perfect comedy that I have just lived in the wake of my entire life as the first in family to go to university. Can you imagine how my dad took that on board? Anyway, the interesting thing that happened to me was, because I was safely at the University of Wollongong, so I didn't really cause too much trouble, but I won a scholarship to study theatre in England. And the really odd thing that happened to me when I was in England was that for the first time in my life, no one gave a shit if I was a bogan. Nobody judged me on the basis of my accent or my manners. To all of those people in another country, I was just Australian, right? And I was this other thing, so there was no automatic class system. And I can't underline this enough, because of the way that I talk. I was in a restaurant in Brisbane the other day, and this happens to me all the time, and somebody asked me if they started giving me their order and asked if I would close the door, which I did, because poor her, really? That's probably the highlight of her fucking day. It makes a great story for me to tell at union conferences. And no shame in it, I was a waitress for years. I was terrible at it, and I felt like saying, love, if you want professional service, I'm not the waitress for you. But we are where we are. But that experience of being in a different class environment meant that I lost my fear, and it meant that I lost the feeling that a lot of people from unrepresented communities have, that they don't know the language or the in-words or have the accent or know the rituals, the behaviour, or specifically the protocols of what it means to engage in a mainstream debate or participate in mainstream media. I mean, they are incredibly class-hostile spaces and culturally hostile spaces. So losing that fear and coming back and going, well, I'm just going to give it a go, was very lucky for me, because I came to Australia at a time where the media was moving online, and for the first time in history, rather than an editor saying, we know X number of people read our newspaper because we've handed out X number of newspapers, they have the data of just how many people are reading and what the demographics of those people are. And wouldn't you know, in a country where even if 50% of the population are not union members, significantly more than 50% of the population believe that unions have a right to exist and are susceptible to pro-union messaging. So writing absolutely overt pro-union material meant, can you imagine, that I built an enormous audience, you know? And it's meant that I have been able to take the messages that I represent of my community and our political values to a community that, hang on, actually wants to hear them. But part of that reason is because I'm culturally familiar. Like, I'm unbelievably proud of where I come from. I grew up in, like, the shitty southern suburbs of Sydney. Like I said, I went to Port Hacking High. Like, I learned a lot of things at school. Some of them was, like, how many bulbs you could potentially do in an hour without, you know, passing out. And, you know, what to do in a knife fight. And, you know, and I'm actually proud of that. Like, that's interesting and that's fun. And where that becomes really important in terms of media strategies and organising strategies is that politics flows downstream from culture. This is something that the American right understand really well. And that, unfortunately, a lot of us from communities who look at what mass media looks like and look at talking heads and politicians and what we're told is like serious leadership, thinks that we have to disavow our culture, our language, how we communicate to one another. And you see it when people do put members on the microphone and go, oh, here, talk to the media, and they freak out because it's like, I don't know what to do, everybody's looking at me, I don't know what the language is and the rest of it. But politics flowing downstream from culture means recognising that actually the most powerful mobilisation tool in your arsenal is having a good time. And being an accessible space and creating a community where we don't have to act like them, they have the obligation to act like us. Because there are, as I said before, far more of us than there are of them, and there always have been. And it's embracing those cultural spaces that actually puts mobilisation into practice. You do not need to sit down with a copy of the Communist Manifesto or the ACTU Constitution or the Curtin White Paper on Full Employment from 1945, all of which, can I say, are fantastic documents of, you know, great importance to our cause. If you can throw a really good party, if you can identify what your members and your communities do to have a good time, you have just realised your first organising opportunity. Because I didn't learn my politics at university. I learned them from my parents, and I learned them from my grandparents and my neighbours and the guy who was best man at my parents' wedding, who was a trade union organiser for the AMWU back in the day. And that process of passive learning of values, it doesn't actually matter how perfect we get the message. It's the fact that we get the intention of what it means to be a community and act in collective interest. Some unions in this country do it really well. The ETU are awesome at this. One of the most powerful organising hubs in Australia is the ETU Clubhouse in Brisbane, where everybody comes off shift, know they can get a drink, no one's going to police their behaviour, no one's going to tell them, you know, like how to behave, and they can have a private gathering, hang out with one another, share stories. And the organisers use it as an opportunity of listening to the members, what they're doing, where they're going, how they're doing it, what their issues are. Right, that is how you mobilise people. My advantage as an activist is that I come from a theatre background. You know, as humiliating as that must be for that journalist who didn't get the job doing the journalism that I did. Ha, 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 ha. Because in the theatre, right, the first 20 years of your career, you're not getting paid. Like, you are doing things at night time, painting the set at 2 o'clock in the morning, moving the scene, pulling the set, learning the lines. One of the actors gets syphilis and can't turn on. But you learn, like, there's, for people to put themselves through that, the poverty and the, like, you know, losing all your free time, working 26 jobs in order to put on some show that 5 people will come and see, is that you're having a good time. And if you can create the opportunity for people to have a good time, they will do anything. They will picket, they will supply a picket, they will strike, they will organise, they will come to the meeting, because you are giving them opportunities to get outside work, which is often boring and repetitive, to get outside family, which even if it's great, is still exhausting, which provides them an experience of gathering in person, which is more exciting than watching television and just sitting there passively absorbing an adventure which is happening to someone else. And it's actually in those spaces of creating fun and entertainment and all those things that we have the opportunity of a passive politics, which is also accessible. You know, one of the best dance parties I've ever been to was at some festival I went to in Barcelona. I can't speak a fucking word of Catalan. I have no idea what the festival was about. But I took my clothes off at 2 o'clock in the morning with everybody else because I was having a great time. And that's the thing. Fun does not have language or behaviour barriers. You know, it creates an automatic community that acts in its own solidarity. It has dynamics of its own self-perpetuation. So let's not get hung up on how the ruling class behave or their middle class minions with their manners and their, you know, news organisations and the rest of it. Let's not look at Twitter as a place where we all have to out-perfect one another. Let's look at conversations as an opportunity for being entertaining, relevant and connected who the fuck we are, because we have every right to be proud of that. Thank you. It's good.